Hello. I girl bossed too close to the sun. But stuff still happened. So what's up? Let's start with a fun fact. I want to have some fun before the rest of the facts. It's a brutal one. So let's have some fun. Just a little bit of poetry for ya. Telephones. Some people would say that telephones are useful. They let us talk to each other from a distance. To be clear, this is not a telephone. This might be a telephone. If you're watching on a phone, it is. That's how you can tell. But back in the day, in not on your phone, how did we get voice from one place to another? Didn't have broadband, didn't have cellular towers. We used wires. But how did we get those wires everywhere? And especially, how did we connect all of the rural households across this gargantuan country? The answer is equal parts ingenious and metal as hell. Barbed wire. In the late 1800s, a patent expired from Bell regarding the telephone system, and so a bunch of companies were able to come in and build out additional telephone networks. A popular thing at the time was to do a thing called a party line, where you basically have a bunch of households on a single telephone line. Different ring patterns were meant for different households, so everyone's phone would ring, but if it wasn't your ring pattern, you weren't supposed to pick it up. You could, and anyone could listen to any conversation. No privacy, but it was cheap. So that's that, but where does the barbed wire come in? Well, telephones needed telephone lines, and telephone lines required infrastructure to put them down. Guess who already had a lot of wire everywhere? Farmers. If you had a bunch of pasture, if you had livestock, if you had whatever you wanted to fence off your land, you probably had barbed wire going all around your property, which meant that there was already a network of connected wires across rural America. At least, there was a lot of wire already. They were able to reuse it. They tapped into the barbed wire networks and used them as makeshift telephone lines. This was effective, cheap, and was in use all the way up to the 1970s. So that's cool, unless you had a particularly wily cow, in which case it might just like walk through the barbed wire and fuck up your conversation. But, you know, stateside! It is day 6 of the United States government shutdown, and there does not appear to be an end in sight. As of now, nearly 2 million federal workers are either working without pay or on unpaid leave. In a couple of weeks, we'll see the pay periods for military and federal workers come and go, and that will increase the stakes of the shutdown significantly. All the while, no actual talks have been happening between the parties. Instead, our leadership is currently in a meme war in which the president is tweeting racist memes about the leaders of the Democratic Party. Trump's only attempts to negotiate have been to threaten, quote, irreversible cuts to federal spending and federal employees. He has also frozen $28 billion in funding that was supposed to go to Democrat-run states for things like infrastructure and public transit. He says he's going to keep doing this until Democrats fold and vote for the Republican bill that has no Democrat concessions, which is not how anything is supposed to work. Very abuser-coded, but we knew that. Trump and his allies are trying to push that the Democrats have shut down the government because they want to, quote, give health care to illegal aliens. And I want to be clear, that is nonsense. I'm not out here trying to defend the Democrats. They've got their own problems, but they're not the ones who are unilaterally in power right now. And to say that their goal is to give illegal immigrants health care is whack. They don't even want to give U.S. citizens health care. They're asking for not wildly increasing premiums on private health insurance that already exists. And the argument that they're trying to give illegal immigrants healthcare is based on completely nothing. It is a lie. They point to legislation that they hope you won't read because that's not what it says. This course of action, the threatening cuts, the freezing funding, the lying about what's going on is so much that even some Republican officials are quietly expressing their concerns about the precedents being set. If only they would be a bit more loud about their concerns, instead of being cowards. As of now, it's a waiting game. Both parties think that they are currently coming out on top, and it's just a matter of which party is going to buckle first. It could be a while. But let's talk about if we are or are not at war. A couple episodes ago, I asked the question, are we at war? And I'm very glad that I can finally give you an update to that answer. The answer to the question of are we at war has changed from sort of yes, but kind of no, to kind of no, but sort of yes. The White House has informed Congress that the United States is now engaged in a, quote, non-international armed conflict with drug cartels. This is what the White House is using as justification for the bombings on civilian vessels in the Caribbean by the U.S. military. We've done that 4 times now. We've killed at least 17 people. And the United States has not produced a shred of evidence to support their claims that these people were narco-terrorists. And even if they were, That's supposed to fall to the Coast Guard, not the U.S. military. But that doesn't matter. If you are of the age that you should schedule your prostate exam, you might recognize the term non-international armed conflict. That is the same thing that George W. Bush used to label Al-Qaeda, without having to actually formally declare war. The difference being that back then, Congress did give approval for use of military force against designated targets from that statement. In this case, both Democrats and Republicans have gone to the Pentagon being like, hey, what the fuck? Actually, can we get like a legal reason for these strikes? To which the Pentagon said, suck it, which is great for international relations. The United States president cannot unilaterally declare war per the U.S. Constitution. That hasn't stopped this administration yet. We shouldn't expect this administration to follow the law. We should expect them to continue doing what they're doing, which is break the law as much as they can until they get a little bit of pushback and then break a different law while they deal with that one. And unfortunately, when they break the law, in some cases that results in murdering foreign civilians. The United States government is currently trying very hard to manufacture consent to get support to bomb any target that someone in the administration deems dangerous. And being the state that arbitrarily bombs random foreign vessels, claiming that they are evil, is not a good state to be. We don't have the option to unbomb those boats, but we sure as hell can bomb them. But why target foreign nationals when we've got so many nationals domestically? In the early hours of the night on September 30th, 2025, the United States government unleashed a federal agent raid on a residential apartment building in Chicago. When I say raid, I mean it. Masked federal agents rappelled from Black Hawk helicopters onto the top of the apartment building while others stormed in from the streets. They indiscriminately ripped people from their homes, zip-tied them, dragged them out in the middle of the night. They separated people from their children, zip-tying children, in some cases, naked children taken from their beds, separated from their parents, and zip-tied in the street. Everyone. Citizen or not. Not that that's an acceptable way to treat anyone of any status. The federal government claims that this apartment building had some illegal immigrants in it, which was their justification for doing that. They turned around and boasted by posting on social media a dramatic video about how successful this operation was, boasting that they got two people who are suspected gang members. I'm going to read you an excerpt from reporting from a local Chicago public radio station. This is from WBEZ. Roger Johnson, 67, is one of many residents who were detained by federal agents during the South Shore raid. A U.S. citizen, he said agents broke through his door and dragged him out in zip ties. Johnson said he was left tied up outside the building for nearly 3 hours before agents finally let him go. Quote, I asked agents why they were holding me if I was an American citizen, and they said I had to wait until they looked me up. I asked if they had a warrant, and I asked for a lawyer. They never brought one. When residents went back to their apartments, they found that their property was strewn about, missing, or destroyed. There's reports that the building was in disrepair to begin with, but residents went back and found their personal belongings destroyed. This was the federal government sending their goons in the middle of the night to raid a residential building in a city that voted against the current administration. This is a gargantuan and indisputable violation of civil rights. And I hope that each and every one of these people get a multi-million dollar payout. This is not the last time this is going to happen, and it is a miracle that nobody was killed. I want to note that there are also suspicious circumstances surrounding a real estate dealing with this building and an investigation from the Fed of this building just a few weeks before this raid. I am waiting to get more information on this as this information is coming out. I've linked to an early article researching this in my newsletter. The last thing about ICE, they are also working real hard to increase their digital surveillance nationwide. They're working with tech companies to find ways to digitally track you everywhere, who you are, who you talk to, what you do. And Apple just pulled IceBlock, an app in the App Store that allowed people to say, hey, there's ICE activity in these different areas. A thing that we're allowed to do. But Apple, and specifically Tim Cook, are fucking cowards. Thank you so much for being here, dear listener. I'm humbled that you would spend this time with me. If you want to help me out, sharing my content is always extremely helpful. Liking, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. It's great. You can also head to isupport.dev where you'll find links to more ways to support me. Thank you. Let's move on. Elsewhere, I'm going to start by talking about Kash Patel, who's a US person, but I promise this is elsewhere. Kash Patel has a new challenge coin, and it's awful. If you don't know what a challenge coin is, it's like a commemorative coin. thing. It's a thing in the US government and probably elsewhere. But Cash Patel made a challenge coin. And it looks like this, and it's the worst. But that makes sense, because he's the worst. Anyway, he went to New Zealand. I'm sorry, New Zealand. He went to New Zealand and he presented his counterparts in New Zealand in their like intelligence agency with a display for his challenge coin. This display included multiple 3D printed pistols, which were found to be possibly made operable with modifications. Pistols in New Zealand are heavily regulated, and if they can even be modified to be operational, they're illegal without permits and such. And so they had to take the pistols and destroy them. So he brought an illegal gift to show off his awful fucking challenge coin. But why was he in New Zealand? It's because the United States has opened an FBI office in New Zealand that reports to Washington. And he was there for the opening of that office. And it was a secret. Like, literally, it wasn't supposed to come out that he was in New Zealand until after he had returned. But yeah, there's been an FBI presence in New Zealand for a while, but it was sort of like an oversight thing that worked with Australia and reported to Five Eyes stuff. Largely, there's now a direct FBI office in New Zealand. Welcome to the fun, y'all. In Gaza, there is just a shred of hope. So the United States has proposed a 20-point plan to end the assault on Gaza by Israel and help to alleviate the incredible levels of human suffering that Israel has inflicted on the people of Gaza. At time of recording, nearly 2 million of the 2.2 million people living in Gaza have been displaced. And estimates say that 2.15 million of the 2.2 million people in Gaza are facing a hunger crisis. None of this had to happen. Just wanted to say that. So Trump is tired of dealing with this, and he's getting increasingly frustrated with Netanyahu. He has proposed a 20-point plan, and Hamas has agreed to some of the plan. Arab nations have also been supportive of some of the plan. The plan's pretty shitty for Palestine in general. And so they're like, look, we're happy and we're looking forward to finding a path towards peace, but you can't be just telling us that we can't exist. The United States proposal essentially is like, yeah, it'll all end, but also like Palestine needs to be completely disarmed and under the purview of like a neutral board and so on and so forth. And Palestinians are like, hey, we deserve our country that you took from us. So conversations are now happening. Israel has still bombed Gaza even after the ceasefire discussions began, because of course. But I just want to note here that the world has seen what's happened. Internationally, there have been huge protests, millions of people taking to the streets, even just from the flotilla getting intercepted by Israel. Polls are showing that sentiment towards Israel among American citizens is rapidly changing. It used to be that Israel had an iron grip on public sentiment in America. If you said anything bad about them, the worst you would get would be people saying, oh, well, you know, it's just so complicated. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's gotten a lot less complicated for a lot more people. Anyway, Japan's woke. Liberals rejoice. This woman's probably gonna be the next prime minister of Japan for the Liberal Democrat Party. She's super fucking conservative. So for international viewers, in the US, the word liberal has been poisoned to mean like progressive / leftist somehow. The closest thing that we have to a progressive party is the liberals. So the Liberal Democratic Party being conservative is funny. So who is it? Let's talk about Sanae Takaichi. Takaichi is a woman in a very male-dominated party. That is indisputable. Japan has a very different set of gender norms than even the US and UK. The gaps are even more significant. And so while it's significant that she's a woman that's going to be leading this party for the first time, she's still deeply conservative. She's strongly anti-queer and not particularly good for women's rights. She's loudly against giving women the right to keep their maiden name after marriage. But largely, she's a conservative populist. That's her platform, is conservative populism. And it shouldn't be surprising at this point. This is kind of happening everywhere. Young people in Japan are becoming disillusioned with the status quo, and smooth-talking populists on the internet are convincing them to shift right. It is the same thing that's happening in Brazil, and the US, and the UK, and France, and Germany, in a lot of places. So the Liberal Democrat Party in Japan has recently lost their stranglehold on the politics there. They had a majority, and they lost it recently. So now they have to actually form a coalition before they can just choose the prime minister. And presumably they are running Takaichi because they want to take away from the growing far-right populism, like the very, very far-right. A new party has sprung up recently and is getting traction because of, again, the online conservatism. And I think they're trying to undercut that, essentially. But still, Japan's looking towards a new prime minister that's going to be very right-wing. The woman idolizes Margaret Thatcher. Leave it at that. Technology. The time has finally come. It's here. Everything that you've done, all of the work that you've been putting in, human existence, every thought, every moment has built to this point. PayPal and Venmo can now send money to each other. Yep, it took for fucking ever, but PayPal and Venmo can now actually send money back and forth to each other. Venmo is owned by PayPal. It's kind of shocking it took this long. Now, again, for international viewers, if you're watching this and you're like, why is that important? What? Or if you're wondering why the US has like a trillion different payment apps, or why we're just weird about money in general, it's because there's money to be made in moving money. We don't really have a viable consumer-grade money-moving system provided by our government that operates for free, like most of the world does. Instead, we have a bunch of private companies that sell the service of moving money for a cost. That cost may be paid by the sender or the receiver, or is eaten by a bank and then turned into bank fees or something, but there's always a cost. They just try to hide it from you. So yeah, if you use Venmo/PayPal, you'll be able to Venmo/PayPal people cross thing. Worldwide, that's kind of neat. Moving on. Do you have eggs? No? Give me your skin. For science. Scientists got weird with it. They have worked on a new fertility treatment that uses skin cells to produce human eggs. Let's say that you are struggling with fertility. Let's say you've got eggs and they're not cracking, so to speak. I don't know if that made any sense. You got eggs and they ain't working. Here's the idea. Scientists take egg and they yank the nucleus out of the cell. We're talking about biology. Then they take your skin cell and they take the nucleus out of a skin cell and put it in the egg cell. It's like threading a needle, except for instead of thread, it's minuscule soft tissue. And instead of a needle, it's also minuscule soft tissue. The idea here is to empower people who otherwise can't produce genetic offspring to produce genetic offspring. That's pretty fucking cool. This is also hyper experimental. So for one, it's kind of dubious. It brushes up against cloning technology. So we're going to set all of that aside and just talk about what it could possibly do, because it could be a potential future treatment for infertility. It also could be a future way for people who do not have the ability to produce offspring themselves to have genetically related children. So like if you are a same-sex couple, for example. Now, that is nowhere near reality. I want to be super clear. According to the people involved in this kind of research, they're saying this is like minimum 10 years off, and that does not even include legality and discussions and approval and stuff like that. The embryos that they were able to cultivate existed, but none of them were like viable and none of them were kept growing past like 6 days. But like the proof is there, the concept is there. And fertility treatment is just one of those things that I think is really fucking cool because it's a thing that ruins so many people's lives. Like, I don't have kids and don't want kids, but I know that there are people who really do. And I want them to have that. So that's cool. Anyway, give me your skin. Lightning round. A New York City apartment building partially collapsed as a chimney just crumbled to the ground, leaving a huge pile of rubble in the street. Leaders of a church in Florida who had a mansion had their mansion raided, in which federal agents found 57, quote, forced laborers who were working the mansion. Some would call that slaves. A blizzard at Mount Everest has trapped hundreds of hikers on the mountain. And finally for today, the head of a major U.S. beef producer has warned that U.S. beef is not producing enough beef for the U.S. Apparently we're too hungry for protein, and with the tariffs and everything, there's just not enough beef, which is why it's expensive. I guess the point I'm trying to make here is, where's the beef? Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Stuff Keeps Happening. Head to skh.news for sources, bonus content, and a map with a location of the beef. My name is Endeavorance. We'll talk again soon. Take care and be well.